Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska!
Bob!
Bob!
What?
Bob!
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Thursday, March 24, 2022, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 430 of the Biden-Harris administration, 227 days until the 22 midterm. 227, my favorite sitcom from the 1980s. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go. And sitting right over there, it's the Goth Ninja. And yes, David, I have pooped. Just referencing a conversation we had just before the show. All the things you missed before this show begins. Yes, it's Jody Hamilton from
you guys,
the...
Bob's got a headache. He's closing in on a headache.
Poop.
And
yes.
This friend of mine's mother, anytime you'd even mention anything about headache, she'd be like, go sit. Go poop.
I don't get the connection, but okay.
Jody... I don't really either, but it was a thing.
Right. Holy crap, it's already that kind of show. It's Jody Hamilton from the From the Bunker podcast, patreon.com/FromTheBunker, and of course the Stephanie Miller Show, stephaniemiller.com, and David Ferguson, we call him T-Rex, from Astral Summer, astralsummer.bandcamp.com is his music project. Go there, support it, buy music. All right, let's see, where do we begin, Goth Ninjas? Well, I guess we already began. I guess we already began talking about...
Yeah. We have commenced.
Yeah, exactly. I do have a bit of a headache, so if I get a little weird... over the course of today's show, it's because my forehead is just
you're
throbbing.
Having a brain bleed and
yeah, it's you know what, it's the pollen starting back here, and because I live in this refrigerator, we keep the windows open and the fans and the windows blowing all that pollen right into the house. So I'm like, fun. Yeah, lots of fun.
Oops. We should check WebMD though, just to be sure.
It's cancer. You have a brain tumor. Just let's have a nice show.
Okay, I need to talk to Miss Hamilton right now because. Holy shit, Jody. Pam and Tommy is blowing us away. We love this show so much on Hulu, the Pamela Anderson, Tommy Lee show, which you recommended, and we started watching on Monday. And I didn't think I was going to like it. I got to be honest.
Neither
going
did I.
In,
neither did I.
I saw a clip with a guy wearing horrible Jay Leno latex face makeup.
Yeah, he was the bad. That was like one of the bad casting things. Mm,
yeah,
but
yeah.
He's the weakest link.
Yeah.
Yeah, he pretty much is, but it's okay because he's hardly in it.
Are you okay? Can I get you something on the other side of the room, Jody?
It's okay. Sorry about that.
Her tab is slightly out beyond arm's reach.
Oh, right,
it's
right.
Very far. It's in the refrigerator. There's just one left. Anyway, no, Sebastian Stan and Lily James are
brilliant.
So good. And if you look at what Lily James especially looks like,
mm-hmm.
not in the Pam drag. You're going to freak out.
I haven't looked yet. I can't believe that. Of course, I know what Sebastian Stan looks like from all the Marvel
right.
movies.
But she, I mean, first off, she's English. Yeah. So there's that. So her accent.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And then secondly, if you look at her, and I was looking at somebody was saying, and it took her, not Tom, not Sebastian Stan, because of all the tattoos that he had to put on so much.
Yeah.
But it took her 4 hours to get into drag.
Oh, it's incredible. And they did such a good job of making Sebastian Stan look like he's 6'5 and gangly, like Tommy
well,
Lee.
It looks like he did lose a little weight, but
yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's got the man's facial.
Yes. The expressions, the voice. Yeah. No makeup except for the tattoos and the face.
And the little soul patch.
Yeah, right.
He studied Tommy Lee film footage. Mm. There is no doubt. It's like a football player studying plays.
Yeah.
He studied him because both Lonnie and I have interacted with Tommy in person. And
really, I can't believe so you actually walked into that tornado because that's what it's
well,
like.
Well, no, I met him once, yeah. You know, I mean, I met him, he was very nice.
Jody knows everyone.
No, my friend John was in the band at the time, and we went to this club that no longer exists on Sunset Boulevard, a friend of mine and I, and he was there. I forget who, I think he was sitting with Bobby Brown, Jamie's ex-wife. Anyway, I think they were sitting together and I kind of knew Bobby and we were standing talking and Bobby was and Tommy was just staring at my tits and I'm like,
well, of course he was.
And they're not even that big. I mean, you know, it was like a nice big, you know, it was like a small C at the time. And it's like, dude, seriously? Like, hi, up here, young man. It's
right. Me. Yeah.
And I'm not blonde and I'm not a Pam Anderson. I'm not a Heather Locklear. I'm not anything remotely like that. But I guess the guy likes booties.
Yeah. And when I worked with Motley Crue, he wasn't in the band. It was like that one period of time in the early 2000s when Tommy Lee wasn't in the band and they had a different drummer. And that's when I got to work with Motley Crue. And so I'm so glad after seeing this with Tommy Lee.
It's like working with Van Hagar. Yeah,
well, no. Hey, look.
I'm just fucking with you. I'm sorry.
I know. Because I actually really like the Sammy Hagar Van Halen. Okay, we're way
so
far.
They were great fans. Did you see the animation part yet? And you'll know what I'm talking about if you've seen it.
Yes, I have. In episode two, the CG. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's the only thing in the entire series where I'm like, really, do we have to do that? But it was funny.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, and that's why, you know, unfortunately, I think because of the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
These two actors will not get nominated for the Emmys that they deserve.
Yeah, probably not, but they should.
And I know who's going to win for actress in a limited series, and it is definitely Renee Zellweger in The Thing About Pam.
Okay, all right. Well,
because, is she amazing. But, I mean, these two, I mean, just Google Lily James, and you will be gobsmacked as to how they thought to cast her.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let alone doing what they did. I mean, she's fantastic. What I love about the series is it really shows what Pam went through.
Absolutely. Mm. She got the fuzzy end of that lollipop for sure.
And it shows how she was treated by everybody, including Tommy, with regard to the tape itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad that she's doing a documentary on it for Netflix, and I look forward to watching that.
Oh yeah, that'll be great too. Yeah.
This series definitely Pam comes out the best in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And these two actors are just so good in it, and wow.
Yeah, they are good. They are really good. And the animation you were talking about is there's a scene, and this is a bit of a spoiler, so if you want to jump ahead like 30 seconds, there's a scene where Tommy Lee's talking to his dick. And
Dick's kind of talking to him, too. It starts with the dick talking to him. Yeah.
It's communicating. They're having a little chat, right?
Yes.
And it looked weird. The CG dick looked weird. And I realized after why it looked weird. Because they probably...
There's that.
Well, it was talking, for sure. And it was moving autonomously. But the other thing was, it just looked strange. And so maybe Hulu said, this is too realistic. Take some of the veins off of it. Make it look a little more cartoony. And that's what they ended up doing. So it does look a little weird, but it's a funny and surprising scene as well, too.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, Delaney and I were like, really?
Yeah, I know. I think it's Kimberly's favorite scene, though.
Tommy Lee is kind of the guy that probably does occasionally talk to his penis.
I'm sure he does. You know. But everyone's going, hey, shut up. Shut up, guys. Stop talking about this show that we haven't seen yet. So, yeah, we better get into politics before the complaints start stacking up on the Patreon page. So let's talk about the Judge Jackson hearings. What a freak show happening on the Republican side. We're seeing right now on display in the Senate Judiciary Committee, we're seeing the most heinous use of racist dog whistles, coded language that we have seen in quite some time, maybe since since the Obama administration, maybe since 2008 or 2012. I remember the last time.
It's so gross.
Yeah, the last time I saw something this obvious was Mitt Romney during the 2012 campaign standing in front of a banner that said Obama isn't working. Which, of course, plays into the Jim Crow era trope that black people are lazy and shiftless. That's what that was all about. But we haven't seen it on display this glaringly in quite some time. And what has occurred, I think, not just to me, but to a lot of observers, is that CRT, critical race theory, the use of that phrase by the Republicans, as well as the use of the word woke, is now the substitute for the N-word. The other day, I think it was Tuesday, it was an entire day of Republicans like Ted Cruz shouting the N-word at Ketanji Brown Jackson in a Senate hearing, in a hearing for a Supreme Court nominee to a sitting federal judge. And when they weren't screaming the N-word, they were trans bashing.
I told you, this is how they're going to, this is exactly what, this is their plan to getting, you know, control of the House and Senate again, is to slide in on an oil slick of transphobia, racism, and voter suppression.
That's exactly right. Yeah. This is all about energizing their racist base for the midterms. Every time they say critical race theory, you have to think in your head that what they're really saying is to their white racist base, look at us bashing this N-word. That's exactly what's going on right now. And I wish someone in the mainstream press would define it that way. Because otherwise, it just seems like us here on a podcast being fringy. But it's not. This is the tactic that they have used for at least the last 50 years. The Republican Party. The Republican Party has been using this kind of language forever. We all remember the Willie Horton ads in 1988. We all remember the Jesse Helms White Hands ad, where it's just a shot of a pair of white guy hands opening up a pink slip and this ominous voice saying, "You worked hard for your job, and some N-word came along and took your job because of racial quotas and affirmative action." It's basically, I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what this commercial for a sitting senator, Jesse Helms, in 1990, that was an actual commercial. The Willie Horton ads, actual commercial. Lee Atwater defined this kind of coded language in an infamous quote about how they use things like states' rights and forced busing and welfare queens as sort of coded language for just going full on racist. But as Lindsey Graham was saying, don't you dare call us racist.
Strength.
So this is the.
That's worse than racism.
Yeah.
That's the one that just makes me want to like impale myself on a spiked fence.
I know.
When they say being accused of racism is worse than racism. And it's like,
oh God, it's true.
I'm so sorry somebody made you slightly uncomfortable, Spanky.
Like, what else are they doing? They're misrepresenting the facts in order to shoehorn them into this racist lens, this way of energizing the base of their party to say, yes, we don't want black people controlling our lives. Ted Cruz, in particular, misrepresenting these children's books.
That backfired. That book is selling, like, the anti-racist baby is now like the number one selling children's book on Amazon.
Yeah. And you know, all it says? It says that children learn racism in their homes from their racist parents. If they happen, they're not saying every parent is racist, but the children who grew up to be racist probably learned it in their homes. Probably learned
it. They didn't lick it off the wall like lead paint, you know? Like,
right. Well, as we know from history, racism is a generational thing. Somehow it continues on after people pass on and die, right? Somehow, how does it continue? Well, it's generational. You learn it in the home. And that's what anti-racist baby was saying. Stop teaching your children race. If you want to be racist, keep it to yourself, idiot. But don't teach it to your children. We're trying to move past all this crap. And then the other book, what was the name of the, there was a second book. Oh, that's my phone. I was like, where's
that? Commissioner Gordon?
Yeah. The other
book. Check the sky. Is there a big bat against the clouds?
Oh, my God. And the fucking phone. Turned off the ringer. Okay. So the other book was Stamped for Kids. And this was even worse. This was the most egregious Ted Cruz misrepresentation of the content of one of these books. Stanford Kids talks about, or at least tries to debunk, the old racist trope that blacks should be sent back to Africa. This goes back to the Civil War. Even Abraham Lincoln at one point was considering, well, when we free the slaves, maybe we should just take them back to Africa. So this has become a racist trope for many, many years. And the point this book makes is we should no sooner send blacks back to Africa than we should send white people back to Europe. So you know what Ted Cruz does? He asked Ketanji Brown Jackson on Tuesday, do you think we should send white people back to Europe? Which isn't the fucking point that was made in the goddamn book. But of course, Ted Cruz has got to represent it that way. Why? Because Ted Cruz is a fucking bigot. That's why. Pandering to bigots and racists.
I've got to say, I really have to admire her composure and poise through all this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is why I will never achieve higher office, because I would be sitting there just being like, I see what you're doing, Senator. It's misrepresentation. And by the way, you're a c***. You know?
Yeah, it really is misrepresentation. And look, I said this to Fugelsang last night on his show. I believe every Supreme Court nominee should have to walk this gauntlet. I'm not talking about what the Republicans are doing. I think every Supreme Court nominee, because they are only one of nine, which is a big deal, because they are one of nine, they should be heavily vetted. However, what's been going on this week is, as Stephanie Miller was calling it the other day, a high-tech lynching. I mean, this is, to go back to the Clarence Thomas hearings, this is kind of what they're trying to do because they've got nothing to lose.
And it's also showboating for the 2024 presidential
race. Well, exactly.
They're trying to be strutting their tail feathers out there.
Yep, that's the motivation.
I think Ted Cruz and Marsha Blackburn are trying to position themselves as Trump alternatives. For the Republican Party. They're like, look at me.
Well, Marsha Blackburn is another good example of the kind of questioning I'm talking about. In fact, the first half of her questioning of Judge Jackson on Tuesday was all the gay bashing. You know, it started out with the N-word, and then it moved on to the gay bashing. And that was the entirety of her questions. If you look at it from 30,000 feet, it is so utterly racist, cynical, homophobic, transphobic, because you could clearly see the demarcation. First half, we're going after black people. It's going to be N-words all over the place. And then the second half, we're going after the LGBTQ community. This is essentially all part of the larger scheme right now, which is to subdivide the country, to take these red states and wall them off from black people, from LGBTQ people, from women of reproductive age, of any race. Yeah.
You're here. Well, I'm not in a red state anymore.
If you want to live as a free person, you are eventually going to be thrust out of that state. I mean, you could stay, but the Republicans are going to make it really difficult for you to enjoy equal protection under the law. And so those demographics are absolutely the first in line to be shoved out. And the Republicans are absolutely working on trans people. Gay marriage is next. They're even moving down the road toward mixed race marriages and banning that.
Yep. How does Justice Thomas, who I'm very, very concerned for his health,
oh my God, I'm so glad you brought that up.
I'm so concerned for him.
I am sending prayers to him and all who care about him. Best of luck. Get well soon.
But no one's heard, by the way, no one's heard from Justice. No one knows where Justice Thomas is.
No, we don't.
No, he's not. He's nowhere to be found. He was supposed to be released from the hospital on Tuesday, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, but he hasn't been. So what's going on with him? This is the weird thing. One of the many weird things about the Supreme Court. It's very opaque when it comes to the health and condition and disposition of the justices. They're very sequestered off, and Clarence Thomas is off being treated by Doogie Howser somewhere, and we don't know. We don't know what's going on.
Hey, Doogie Howser is actually an adult now.
Yes, that is true. but he'll always be 13 to me. I've never seen an episode, so I don't know what the hell I'm talking
Neither
about.
Neither have I. He never broke into song and dance, and that's what bothers me.
Right. Oh, shit. So here, an example, and obviously this guy's not a member of the United States Senate or the Senate Judiciary Committee, thank fucking God, well, at least for now, because you know, anything can happen tomorrow. Charlie Kirk may end up, you know, in the Senate at some point, given where we're headed.
Oh, God forbid.
But Charlie...
Bite your tongue.
Yeah. Well, Charlie Kirk said on whatever his show is yesterday, he said that Ketanji Brown Jackson is what your country looks like on critical race theory. So remember what we're talking about when CRT comes up in their vernacular. Ugh. So basically,
yeah, Charlie Kirk is what you look like when your mama drank.
Yeah. So he's basically saying here, Ketanji Brown Jackson is what your country looks like on black people.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's, you know what?
And I'm saying that he's what your country looks like on fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a problem with that.
He is really concerned that black people will take over the country and make white people the slaves. This is a legitimate concern by one of the thought leaders of the current Trump Republican movement. This nitwit, I mean, he is, I mean, we talk about the morons on the Republican side a lot. You know, Sarah Palin and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and just, there are a lot of
Charlie
dumbasses.
Kirk is kind of a moron's moron.
Yeah,
kind of is, yeah.
He's kind of the moron that other morons say, oh, that guy's a moron.
Right.
Yeah.
But Charlie Kirk was on his show the other day talking about this whole thing. He's desperately concerned about this black takeover of the United States. And he said here, these very simply stated questions do not require overthinking. So I suppose another question here, though, is where does this come from? Well, Ketanji Brown Jackson is what our country looks like on critical race theory. KBJ is your country on CRT. This couldn't be more racist. KBJ, yeah. Ketanji Brown Jackson, is an embodiment of the tyranny that we currently live under. She is an ideological, unintelligent, this is Charlie Kirk talking, unintelligent, he says, yet confident fanatic who is so dismissive that you might even ask the question of what a woman is. And so, oh, that was the other thing. Who was it? Marsha Blackburn asking Ketanji Brown Jackson, asking her to define what a woman is, which to me is just a gigantic trick question. Yeah. That's like, yeah, that's a, and the reason that was asked is to trip her up and to get her in trouble with someone.
Has anyone asked Marsha Blackburn lately what a hairbrush is?
No shit. Cream rinse, conditioner. Yeah. Come on.
I'm maybe like Margie Sporkfoot, like grabbed it out of her purse. She's got it down in her seat so she can like, she's a little itchy this week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the kind of shit we're talking about here. They are legitimately concerned that if we confirm Judge Jackson to become the next justice of the Supreme Court, that she is somehow going to use that post to institute some kind of white slavery. Sort of takeover, some sort of tyranny over the rest of the red hats, I guess. That's the idea. Just insane. By the way, Charlie Kirk was suspended from Twitter for misgendering Rachel Levine. And that happened Tuesday for an attack on the U.S. Assistant Secretary for Health, Rachel Levine, in which he repeatedly misgendered and deadnamed her. The Turning Point USA founder tweeted on March 15 that Levine, a trans woman who was transitioned in 2011, spent 54 years as a man, that's a quote, while deadnaming her. Quote, he transitioned into being a woman in 2011. Joe Biden appointed Levine to be a four-star admiral, and now USA Today has named Rachel Levine as a woman of the year, the right-wing blowhard sneered. Where are the feminists? He asked. A Twitter spokesperson confirmed to the Daily Beast that the platform took enforcement action on the account for violating its hateful conduct rules. Well, good. Perfect.
Good.
Yeah. And a part of that prohibits targeted misgendering or deadnaming of transgender individuals. The spokesperson added that Kirk will be required to delete the tweet and spend 12 hours in read-only mode before he can gain full access to his account. I love some of this. Some of this shit. It's about time, though, this guy gets bounced entirely off Twitter. He can go screw around on Getter or whatever the other Trump thing is. Truth Social, whatever that is.
I guess that's 12 hours he can spend more time getting his face stuck in a pool drain. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Because, I mean, if you look, like, his entire, like, everything from the eyebrows down has now, like, migrated to the bottom. You'll see.
Yeah, you know yeah. What I mean. Well, no, it's just like he's got a Snapchat filter turned on that shrinks his face but leaves his head at his normal size. I think there are at least a couple of different filters that do that. They should just change the name to the Charlie Kirk filter. That's exactly what they should
there
do.
There you go. Yeah.
So Judge Jackson is now the most popular Supreme Court nominee since Sonia Sotomayor. It's a big deal. And it's a Fox News poll, of all things. Show that Judge Jackson is significantly more popular among voters than the last three Supreme Court nominees. A 56% majority would vote to confirm her, the highest of any nominee since the question was first asked on a Fox News poll in 2005. The next closest was Justice Sonia Sotomayor, nominated by President Obama, when 53% say they would vote to confirm her in July of 2009. Approval ratings for the three justices confirmed between Sotomayor and Jackson's hearings were significantly lower. Well, let's bask in this schadenfreude for a second. Justice Amy Coney Barrett received an approval rating of 50% during her confirmation hearings in 2020, while 45% approved of Justice Neil Gorsuch in 2017, and only 40% say they would vote to confirm Justice Brett Kavanaugh in 2018. Whoops. Sorry, Brett. I like beer.
Do you think she'll get 60?
I think
she would have overcome a filibuster in the past.
I don't know that she'll get 60. I'm going out on a limb, though, and saying that she will get a few Republican votes. So I think there'll be at least
a few. If she were a white man with that resume, she'd get 100.
Yeah. Well, we talked about this with Buzz on Tuesday. She is easily the most qualified nominee on the entire court.
Forever. I mean,
yeah, yeah. So if you actually look point by point, the qualifications of the other sitting justices, she's more qualified than anyone on the Supreme Court right now.
Yes.
As far as just ticking
the
boxes.
This is pretty much the story, though, of every single black woman in business, every single black woman in academia, every single black woman in sports. It's like they have to be 1.5 times as good.
Oh, yep. Try way more than
male.
That.
Yeah, twice, 2-3 times as good to be able to be considered half as worthy.
Yeah. I mean, look at what...
I watched this hectoring that's been going on from the Republicans, and it reminded me of so many staff meetings I've been in where some, like, asshole white guy is either, like, over-talking the black woman. I interrupted people in meetings before and being like, you know, Frank, let her talk, please? You know,
you like, interrupted people in meetings?
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah, well, that's the truth. That's the truth. If you're a black woman in this country, you have to work 1,000 times harder than the next nearest white guy. Absolutely. And if you're a white woman in this country, you have to work, you know, maybe
we have to
not
work
as hard,
not quite as hard, but harder than the average, the guy with the same resume.
Exactly.
That happens to be white. It's just, I mean, the look on her face, I've had that look.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, I'm just waiting for him to stop fucking talking.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of like what Leo McGarry did on the West Wing, where if the senators were snippy in a hearing, he would kind of be passive aggressive right back. Like, if they would ask him a question, he would, like, cup his hand over the microphone and then just lean over and start talking bullshit with his lawyer and then say, can you repeat that question again? And they repeat the question. He says, okay, hang on, just 1 second. And then he cups his hand over the microphone and talks to his lawyer about having lunch or dinner later. It's just the greatest thing. It's like, why are you doing this? Well, you're being snippy. That's why.
My dad in meetings, when people would be talking over each other and not listening to one another, he would just start talking really, really softly.
I can't even imagine.
I've seen that. Yeah. It works.
And it works because he's the boss. Right. So it's like, what is he saying? We have to be quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of yelling, which a lot of bosses would normally do, he would just really just start talking kind of at a low tone and just to the person next to him who would now start listening. And then that person across from and it would slowly get to the rest of the table. And then he'd go, now let's get on with the meeting.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to piss off your dad. If he starts talking in a meeting, man, I'm listening to Joe Hamilton every word.
One more thing about my dad. Okay. So at work at my mom's show, he never wore a suit and tie. It's show business.
Right.
So if he would come in a suit and tie, it was because somebody was getting fired.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
And apparently one late morning, he came into work late, and he was wearing a suit and tie. As a lot of executives do, he had changes of clothing in his office.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know if it was Sharky or Becky was his assistant at the time, but anyway, she looked up and went, "Who's getting canned?" He goes, "Tell everybody, nobody's getting canned. I just came from a funeral."
And then he ended up firing someone anyway, right?
No, he didn't. But he's like, "Tell everybody it's fine." Because, you know, word got around the sound, you know, the soundstage in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit, he's wearing
a suit. National emergency.
Yeah.
There was a funeral.
Let everybody know he was at a funeral. I was at a funeral. Nobody's getting shit canned today.
Yep. Oh, God. Yeah, yeah. Okay, coming up here in just one second, I want to talk about Ben Shapiro's stab, his use of the N-word here. I mean, the coded language for the
Charlie
N-word.
Kirk's ventriloquist dummy, Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, or it should be actually the reverse of that, because I think Charlie Kirk is subservient to Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro runs the show.
It's a size thing, though.
Yeah, so I guess
it's
so.
It's like Chucky is what you're saying.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right, right.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I saw a picture of them together, like at some conservative thing, and it really does look like Charlie Kirk is one of those assholes that brings this ventriloquist dummy to the bar to meet you.
So they kind of look like Master Blaster, where Ben Shapiro is Master and Charlie Kirk is Blaster. Okay, so we're going to talk about Ben Shapiro here in a second. We're going to get into Ukraine and Russia, and we want to talk about the Mark Pomerantz resignation letter here, too, and a whole lot more. But, you know, there's nothing more stressful than out-of-control credit card debt. I've so been there myself. A bunch of years back, sleepless nights, panic, that sense of futility. How do I get out from under this? I ended up filing a Chapter 7. And that's how I got out of it. But you don't have to resort to the nuclear option. All you need is Lightstream. So did you know that refinancing your credit card balances can lower your interest rate and save you money? And you don't have to be a financial expert to do it, because Lightstream is here. You can get a fixed rate credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream, and you could save thousands in interest. Rates start at 4.98% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. It's lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are absolutely no fees attached. The application is 100% online. You might even get your money the same day you apply. That's a big deal. So just for my listeners, here's the big deal for you. You can apply and get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Seska. That's LightStream.com/CESCA. I got a link in the description for you under this episode at BobSeska.com for you to click. So go and do that. Subject to credit approval, rates range from 4.98% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50 autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Seska for more information. Thank you.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska. All-time favorites all day long.
The song is not safe for work, cause it mentions your neckties. And talk of office bondage is not safe for work. This song is not safe for work because it mentions my daydreams.
Yeah, this is a kind of new Bitter Elegance right here. This is a track called NSFW, Not Safe for Work. Perfect for today's show. And what happened here is this album came out back in September, I think. And producer Jeffrey Wynn Prince decided, hey, I don't like how this sounds. So he went back in and remastered all of the tracks and re-released the album. So the album is called Scream Inside Your Heart. Link in the description under this episode at BobSeska.com. Support The Bitter Elegance, one of our faves here on the show. Been playing them since the very beginning of our indie music here on the podcast.
my latest.
Thank you for supporting all of our bands here. BobSeska.com/music to submit. Thank you for doing that. All right.
Man, that is the worst feeling when you've released something and you go back and listen to it and you're like, this doesn't sound like it should.
Yeah.
So frustrating.
I know what you mean. And it's so weird with hearing, too. You could be listening to something and mastering it and trying to mix it and get it right, and your ears start to get tired and you're not hearing everything clearly. So sometimes it helps to take like a few days away from it and then come back and listen to it again after your ears have recovered. Yeah. It's all about maintaining your ear. I'm sure you know this, Jody. We're not telling you anything new here, but it's, you know, it's a challenge. I'm sure Lonnie has to deal with that all the time.
He can't hear.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm getting close. I'm getting close to that.
Lonnie is so solid as a producer. I mean, every time we mention his name, I'm just like, oh, God, he's so good. But, I mean, everything I've heard him do is just, like, rock solid, filling the speakers. It just comes out with just this big, full, fat sound. I love that.
Yeah.
He turns the TV up to 100.
Yeah, we turn the TV up pretty loud here, too. Sometimes I turn on the closed captioning. Just sometimes with the mumblecore and things like that, I have trouble making out some of the dialogue. Just like...
No, sometimes Lonnie literally goes, what'd they say?
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
Right. Yes.
Oh, we read everything. We have words. We have the captions on for everything except the news because they're not usually very accurate.
Well, because they're doing it live. It's very difficult to do closed captioning as it's happening. Yeah. It's very, very difficult.
Well, Stephanie Miller and I are racing our bikes to deafness is what we're doing because we both keep our headphones loud, like very, very loud. I've got my headphones turned up all the way just because that's how I learned in radio. That's what you do. You have your headphones loud so you can hear every nuance of the show as it goes out on the air if you're doing radio or you know, into the recording if you're doing a podcast.
I mean, that's the engineer's job. Yeah. But I worked in public radio, so everything was very calming
and
soothing.
Yeah.
It's 68 degrees.
Well, I'm also the engineer. That's the problem. That's evidenced by the fact that we had to start and stop that rejoin music like three times coming out of the commercial break, which you didn't hear because I've cut that out. But there's a problem with my soundboard where just randomly, suddenly, it'll get like really low end and bassy. And I don't know why. I have no idea why it's doing that. It just mysteriously happens. I don't touch it. It just happens. And so it's just one of those things like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix it. Ah, I wish I had an engineer. That's one of those times.
Manhattan prosecutor.
Yeah.
We
were talking about Ben Shapiro. I was talking about Ben Shapiro here because he took a stab at woke Disney, which, again, what we're talking about with this vernacular is what Ben Shapiro is bitching about here is N-word Disney. He's afraid that Disney is getting too close with, you know, in his vernacular, the N-words and gay people and trans people, you know, the whole thing. And it's scaring
them. God forbid they should be inclusive.
I know.
And that
I know.
Kids that don't look like Alice in Wonderland, you know, should feel included and welcomed. God forbid.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like it just, he's like, just to me, like, he's mistaken like the ability to talk quickly for being erudite. You know, but I mean, his insecurities are just like they come seething out of everything he does. I hope that I'm not that transparent as a person that people can't listen to every word I say and be like, wow, he's scared he's got a little dick. You know, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the difference between, I think, what we do and what Ben Shapiro does. One of the many differences is that we are sincere. We are firmly tethered to our integrity and our core values. Ben Shapiro and a lot of these guys are putting on a show for the suckers and rubes. That's exactly what they're doing. This is a career move for 90% of them. What they're doing is they see a giant pile of cash ready for the taking. And that's from these Trump supporters, the red hats. And so they're there to do the cynical cash grab. That's the entire thing. That's the entire movement.
Because, I mean, really, there's like it's cutthroat over in the right-wing world for mailing lists.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like, they will, like, knife people, like, car bombs and shit over, like, people's mailing lists because they know those donors will just keep coughing up the money.
Yeah, that's a ticket to more cash, and they're all about the cash, that's for sure. I mean, we all know that we can buy things for money, and then we like to have careers because it gives us money to buy things. But they're doing this, they're exploiting, they're doing all the bad things that you're not supposed to do for money. and they're doing them. So Ben Shapiro going off on woke Disney. So bear in mind the Mad Libs here. When you hear the word woke, substitute in your head what they're really saying, which is the N-word. America's biggest corporations are being held hostage by the woke. He said here not just woke people, but he said the woke. Because they are cowards. Remember the substitution. They are absolute cowards, he said. Disney is a company that is meant to derive pleasure for children. That is what it is for. It is a company.
Yeah, it sounds nasty when he says it.
I know. Yeah. It is a company. Their entire net worth basically was built on the idea that they were going to give you a safe place to let your children be entertained, he said. Shapiro continued, by the way, if you want entertainment that's going to cater to your children, here's the horrifying part. We're going to start making kids content over here at Daily Wire specifically. So you don't have to be catered to by companies who hate your guts and cater to the people who despise your values. The people who despise your values, you know, the black people and the gay people and the enlightened people who despise the fact that you're racist, bigots, transphobic, homophobes is what you are. Misogynists, throw that in there too. Yeah, well, it's shocking that we would be alarmed by that kind of behavior, right? Or that Disney would be alarmed.
I'm just imagining, like,
by
that. The titles. Like, yeah. Susie was a good narc, you know? Or
well, we've seen this before. Didn't Rush Limbaugh have an entire series of children's books that he released?
Oh, God, there is no human being I would want further away from my children if I had them than Rush fucking Limbaugh.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah, he was the worst. And every day that goes by, I'm like, thank God we don't have Rush Limbaugh to deal with anymore. Yeah. Yeah. So
I feel so bad for his family,
yeah,
Bob.
I know. So do I. I'm sending my thoughts and prayers to Clarence Thomas and the family of Rush Limbaugh is what
I am too, Bob, along with, yes, I very much hope that all goes well. I really, really do. Really right. Do.
Yeah.
I say this with utmost sincerity.
Why are you questioning my sincerity?
God. Oh, my God. See, we're not really exaggerating the racism here. They're right up to the very edge of just actually saying it.
That's the whole bully ethos, is to know the line, mm-hmm. to know just how far you can go to hurt other people without actually having to face consequences.
That's right.
And that's their business model, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the cruelty is the point.
And they also realize that without the racist vote, without the white supremacist vote, they're kind of screwed. So this is a voting block that they absolutely need in order to win elections. That's why they need to have all of this voter suppression and all the big lie laws passed. Because they know the crazier they get and the more racist they become to get that voting block, to get that racist voting block, they need to stack the deck on the vote count front. Otherwise, they are going to lose. Why? Because they're so racist and awful.
With Stacey Abrams and, what is my senator's name? I'm just like an airhead today.
Raphael Warnock.
Raphael Warnock are both up for election this year.
Yeah.
And they can try all they want to, but they are not going to be able to keep black people from voting this year.
Yeah.
They will be like waiting in line, doing the electric slide in groups, having joyous, like, we are here to vote.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone that tries to arrest me if I try to take water to someone who's been standing in line to vote mm-hmm. in Georgia is gonna, yeah.
Well, here's the additional existential stakes on top of everything else that we've been talking about when it comes to the midterms, when it comes to 2024. Right now, a majority of Americans apparently want World War III. This new AP poll shows that out of all adults, 56% believe that Biden is not tough enough on Russia, and 36% say that he is. So this is where we are with the American voters at this point. 56% basically say, okay, you need to do more. Joe Biden has walked right up to the line to the fullest extent of what he can do without precipitating World War III. And if you want him to go further, you better put your name to this, Because we're not talking about fighting the Taliban. We're not talking about deposing Saddam Hussein in Iraq. What we're talking about here is World War III with the very real possibility of a nuclear exchange. And if you're one of these people who's like, okay, he needs to be a lot tougher, what the fuck does that even mean? Does that mean a no-fly zone? Well, that's war. Does that mean admitting Ukraine to NATO? That's war. Do you want a direct shooting war with Russia? And if so, are you willing to accept the consequences of that? And the consequences include maybe your city being blown to smithereens. Maybe European cities.
Not just blown to smithereens, yeah. But like a radioactive crater that will be uninhabitable for thousands of
years.
Yes. I mean,
yes.
Creating massive environmental mayhem, poisoning the groundwater, poisoning the air.
I don't understand this. I understand, though, that we're all sitting here going, yeah, it's frustrating to see the atrocities. It's frustrating to see all the people in Ukraine, the children, the women, everyone being displaced, watching the war crimes happening. And we know now that there are war crimes. The State Department has confirmed that. But the fact of the matter is that it'll be a gazillion times worse. There is not a number to quantify how much worse it can possibly get at this point. And 56% of people.
Like, which American cities do you want to let go of?
Then? Yeah, exactly. You know? Which European cities do you want to let go of, too? Because it's going to start there. Because you know what? Vladimir Putin will hit Berlin first.
Mm-hmm.
Why will he hit Berlin? Because he's still bitter about the wall coming down.
Yeah.
So he goes after Berlin. Well, obviously, Ukraine is there, too. And Ukraine will feel the worst of Vladimir Putin's nuclear wrath. That'll start. And then it'll go to some of the more Eastern European nations, including maybe as far west as Berlin. This is what the American people are, 56% are begging for.
I feel like that's just when you take polls like this,
yeah.
I really feel like the vast majority of American people, they're not like us. They don't follow politics. They only get tuned in around election time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the broad outlines of this, all they see is refugees and bombed out buildings, and they're like, we should be doing something without actually fully thinking through. Like, I mean, the minute you probably sit one of these people down and explain to them that, like, what, you know, mutually assured destruction has, like, kept things and missiles in their silos for 50 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do, you know, if they do something nuclear and then we don't respond, then our credibility is just gone.
Right. You know where Jimmy Dore and Glenn Greenwald and Michael Tracy, you know where they land in this poll? The 6% that say that Biden is being too tough on Russia. That's where those guys are. But here, the breakdown by party, 68% of Republicans think that Joe Biden isn't being tough enough on Russia.
Right.
68%. Mm-hmm. They want nuclear war. They want a nuclear World War III with Russia. That's exactly what they want. It's like, for some reason, we have crossed a threshold. I don't know at what point in our recent history we crossed this threshold. But at some point, I think a vast majority of Americans, at least, just confine it to the United States, have decided, fuck it, none of this world is worth saving. Fuck it, we're not going to do what we need to do as far as COVID goes. Fuck it, we're going to start pushing for foreign policy that leads us into a nuclear war with Russia, out of which no one will escape. Somehow, we have entered this self-destructive mode in this country. And I don't know why. Maybe it's we love the doom scrolling. We're really infatuated with the idea of coming up so close to this.
I think some people just honestly think
disaster.
It would be a relief.
What's that?
That like an emergency, like things where people. I mean, it's. I think that some people. I mean, a lot of people are just like struggling so hard.
Yeah.
To get from point A to point B,
mm-hmm.
and with medical debts and bankruptcy looming, and just. People in the family that got sick and are still sick, and elderly parents to look after because society doesn't give a shit about old people.
Is that leading people to believe that it's just say goodbye, cruel world?
Basically.
Shit's so hard. Like, I don't want anyone to live anymore, is what they're saying.
I don't think they're thinking, again, like if we're talking mostly conservative people, they're not really thinking far past the end of their own nose.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's the reality of it. The U.S. Has assembled what is called a tiger team. And the Tiger team is now devising a plan if Vladimir Putin decides to use tactical nukes inside Ukraine. Mm. This is a reality, people.
Yes, it is.
I'm not talking crazy talk here. I'm not that guy who's always talking about aliens with the crazy hair. And I'm not talking about Marsha Blackburn. I'm talking about the aliens guy. A senior administration official said any use of a small tactical nuclear bomb by Russia, even inside Ukraine, and not directed at a NATO member, would mean that all bets are off on the United States and NATO staying out of the war.
Yeah.
On one hand, I like the fact that there's a team that's coming up with contingencies for this, the Tiger team. On the other hand, this is like a direct invitation of Vladimir Putin to say, hey, if you want to involve NATO in all of this, knock off a city using a tactical nuke. And I don't know if a tactical nuke would destroy an entire city, certainly destroy part of a city.
It could give radiation poisoning to several thousand people besides the initial destruction. The thing, Rude Pundit tweeted out a little while ago that, hey, why doesn't just Putin pull out and say he won the war? The propaganda's the same at home.
Yeah,
the reason he won't do that is because he likes killing people.
Yeah, that would be a great idea.
Here, dude, here's your off-ramp.
Yeah.
Go home, tell everybody at home you won the war.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's lucid enough.
That may actually be what ends up happening. I mean, because this whole time I've been like, what is his endgame?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still struggling with that because I –
Yeah.
But and then again, we're trying. It's like trying to figure out what Trump is thinking from the beginning, one paragraph to the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's your mind just like ends up screaming and curling up in a ball at the back of your skull.
Yeah, yeah. I feel a little bit like Howard Beale right now. Like, what's wrong with you people? Just like, oh my God, have we just lost our minds? I've been saying this phrase for a couple of years now. It's the American nervous breakdown. Our society is having some sort of thing it's going
it's
through
global.
Right now.
It's global.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think it's just us.
And it's been sparked by Vladimir Putin and social media. Mark Zuckerberg, I think, has made everything worse. I don't know if that's the cause, but he certainly rode that wave. The both of them are riding that wave. Oh, God. Yeah, I'm sorry for getting this dark with the show, but here we are. I mean, I don't know if I would be able to sleep at night if I got up here and said, yeah, you know what? Everything's going to be fine. I don't know that everything's going to be fine. It probably will be. I mean, if you look at history as a precursor, I guess it could be. But we also need to be aware of what our words are asking for, what we're requesting of our leadership in this country. If you're sitting there and you're on social media, you're telling your member of Congress, whatever, that you think Joe Biden needs to be tougher on Russia, you better have the next 100 line items after that statement in terms of exactly what you mean.
Well, and with this polling, how many people are willing to say reinstate the draft?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, seriously. I mean, oh yeah, let's go. We should send troops in. Okay, your kid.
Yeah.
And your daughter, I'm sorry, but women should be, registering for the draft. It's really sexist that they don't have to. And I thought that when I turned 18, that it wasn't fair. Not that I wanted to go to war, but I just don't think it's fair that women don't have to register for the draft.
No, I didn't think it was
fair either. It's not fair. It's not right. Yeah. It's completely unfair and wrong. And women do fight in wars now. And so I think that soon enough in the next generation should start having girls register to draft when they turn 18. And by the way, kids, you really want to go to war? You want to send your kids to war? You want to go to war if you're under the age of 26 and over the age of 18? Let's get you drafted.
That's
if
right.
We reinstated the fucking draft, tell you right now, a lot of the warmongering would go away.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I would have thought that seeing the devastation in Ukraine would have backed certain people down off of this, let's have a civil war in the United States posture. Mm-hmm. And that goes for the cosplaying militias, the weekend warriors with their Amazon tactical suits and whatever. And the people who are like, yeah, fuck it. You know, it's okay if Texas wants to secede and all that shit. You want the United States, or at least big chunks of the United States, to look like Ukraine. Keep talking like this. Keep asking for shit like this, because that's what's going to happen. And it doesn't seem as though it's dissuading anyone from this bellicosity that's risen up over the last 5-10 years here inside the United States. like, look at me, look at me, look at me. And I can't stand it that other people win when they're wrong. So therefore, we need to start shooting people. It's fucking
madness.
Well, again,
I go back to the fact that people's lives, I mean, because a lot of these people that are so freaking angry and are so pro-Trump are really poor.
Mm-hmm.
And like their lives have just felt like one kick in the face after another. And they really, really, really want a person to be responsible for them to hate, as someone that they can fight. Because, I mean, you can't fight globalization. You can't fight the death of coal.
Yeah.
You know, you can't bang on their trailer door and call them out into the yard and beat their ass.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they really want to, and that's why I think, because I've been trying to figure out, like, these Q people are, like, hungry for violence.
Yeah. But not watching it, not being involved in it, just watching
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. They're the Boogaloo boy that went to Ukraine. Did you hear about this?
Oh, no, I didn't. What?
He went.
Which side was he going to fight on?
He went to Ukraine to help the Ukrainians, But then when he got there, for obvious reasons, the Ukrainians don't have a lot. They're being handed weapons that are available. So mm-hmm. he's like, wait, what? And then he freaked out because he did a little chicken shit, you know. And then he claimed he couldn't get out of the country. And another guy goes, no, they'll let you out of the country. I don't know what the fuck this guy's talking about. But basically, he went there and said, I'm going to go there. And I'm not leaving until the Ukrainians win. And he left within like 48 hours.
Yep. Yep. It's actually scary.
Real bullets,
when it
kid. Yeah. It's like, well, it's not a video game. They're not just whizzing by and pinging. You don't get another quarter or another like life.
I think we should. I think what we're doing differently than in World War II is at least we're helping Ukraine. Unlike Poland, was not helped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In 39 when Germany invaded. So the fact that Europe is helping, that we are helping as much as we can right now without putting anybody outside of Ukrainians in mm-hmm. harm's way. And that a lot of Russian soldiers, the one Russian soldier that got out of his tank, got 10 grand and he's going to be a Ukrainian citizen and gave him the tank for 10 grand.
Yeah.
Good for that kid. and that's the other thing. A lot of these Russian soldiers are like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, this isn't what I signed up to do. All of them, but a large amount apparently.
Yeah.
And
some
so
Russian
this is scary.
Soldier like run over his own colonel with a tank.
Maybe.
He was just so tired of his
I
crazy,
don't blame
like,
him. Yeah. I mean, these kids they didn't sign up for this shit. Mm-hmm. They were told one thing, something else is going on, and when they finally get to the front lines, they're like, what?
Yeah.
You know.
I have to shoot old ladies?
I have to shoot old ladies. I have to kidnap children. I mean, there's been reports of some chemical weapons being used. It hasn't been confirmed yet.
Phosphorus,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, and that to me, it's like, I do agree that if there is a tactical nuclear weapon used, we have to do something.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what that's going
to
be.
I mean, we cannot not do something, yeah, but we have to do something. And I mean,
I don't know any of the science behind this, but it seems to me that like if this is going to sound so hokey, I shouldn't even say it. I would think there's got to be some way to like use like an EMP or something to just like knock out all of Russia's technology.
That's why they're all in Europe right now as we speak talking.
Yeah.
They're all trying to figure it out.
There's been talk of blocking Russia's access to GPS as a possibility. Yeah.
There you go.
But going back to the Boogaloo boys, like that guy probably thought that war was kind of like these staged fist fights that these guys have out in front of a Sheetz convenience store, you know, on the weekends. It's not like that. It's far worse. Right. It's far, far worse. They don't understand that. So it continues.
I think a lot of these guys that like with their militias and stuff, I think they really think Home Depot is going to be open, you know?
Or the Big Five Sporting Goods and go get them again.
And then they're going to be able to pick up Chipotle on the way home from the battlefield.
Right.
You know?
It doesn't work that way. Nope. All right. Well, I want to talk about Mark Pomerantz here in just a second. We're way, way late for a break. So let's talk about the after party. Every Friday, Kimberly Johnson and I record a fourth Bob Seska Show podcast for the week. But this one's completely different from your usual Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday shows. The Friday after party is loaded with all the politics you want, while also including uncensored, completely obscene conversations about sex, drugs, movies, television, our personal lives, all the crap we can't get away with on the free show. So please help us support this podcast So please help support this podcast by subscribing to our Friday After Party for just $10 per month. And bonus, you're also going to get 2 Shadow Docket shows every damn week included in that level of support. That's BobSuskaShow.com, or just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at BobSuska.com. Thank you.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Life's a tumble, boy. Well, the band it roared, it broke the peace. Does he even stoop? Like war, a tidal rip, a million strong that no one understood.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
This is the great Elijah Bone. Wonderful. Yeah, it's a song called Dancing on the Beach. I'm thinking that maybe this...
I love that spacey guitar track that sounds like Cocteau Twins.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Spacey, yes.
Beautiful and shimmery.
Yeah, spacey is a great way to describe Elijah Bone, for sure. And this song, Dancing on the Beach, might be our first official song of the summer. We're not quite... We just started spring a couple of days ago. But now's about the time of year when I start to look at possible songs of the summer, which we're going to do again this summer, and we'll do a whole month counting down all the best songs of the summer. We're going to do that, too, and this is going to definitely be on the list. All right, link in the description to support Elijah Bone, as always. So let's talk about Mark Pomerantz and what's going on in the New York District Attorney's office. And what I think is going on is scandal. I think someone's paid off the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg.
I do too now.
This letter leaked to the New York Times from Mark Pomerantz. He's one of the attorneys who was working on the prosecution of Donald Trump for all these financial crimes in the Manhattan DA's office. And so his resignation letter reads like so. Dear Alvin, this would be Alvin Bragg. I write to tender my resignation as a special assistant district attorney and to explain my reasons for resigning. I'm going to read this whole thing because this is super duper important.
Really? Okay.
As you know from our recent conversations and presentations, I believe that Donald Trump is guilty of numerous felony violations of the penal law in connection with the preparation and use of his annual statements of financial condition. His financial statements were false, and he has a long history of fabricating information relating to his personal finances and lying about his assets to banks, the national media, counterparties, and many others, including the American people. The team that has been investigating Mr. Trump harbors no doubt about whether he committed crimes. He did. In late 2021, then District Attorney Cyrus Vance directed a thorough review of the facts and law relating to Mr. Trump's financial statements. Mr. Vance had been intimately involved in our investigation, attending grand jury presentations, sitting in on certain witness interviews, and receiving regular reports about the progress of the investigation. He concluded that the facts warranted prosecution, and he directed the team to present evidence to a grand jury and to seek an indictment of Mr. Trump and other defendants as soon as reasonably possible. This work was underway when you took office as district attorney. He's talking to Alvin Bragg. You have devoted significant time and energy to understanding the evidence we have accumulated with respect to the Trump financial statements, as well as the applicable law. You have reached the decision not to go forward with the grand jury presentation and not to seek criminal charges at the present time. At the present time is an important little phrase there. Yeah. The investigation has been suspended indefinitely. Of course, that is your decision to make. I do not question your authority to make it, and I accept that you have made it sincerely. However, A decision made in good faith may nevertheless be wrong. I believe that your decision not to prosecute Donald Trump now and on the existing record is misguided and completely contrary to the public interest. I therefore cannot continue in my current position. In my view, the public interest warrants the criminal prosecution of Mr. Trump, and such a prosecution should be brought without any further delay. Because of the complexity of the facts, the refusal of Mr. Trump and the Trump Organization to cooperate with our investigation, and their affirmative steps to frustrate our ability to follow the facts, this investigation has already consumed a great deal of time. As to Mr. Trump, the great bulk of the evidence relates to his management of the Trump Organization before he became president of the United States. These facts are already dated, and our ability to establish what happened may erode with the further passage of time. Many of the salient facts have been made public in proceedings brought by the Office of the Attorney General, and the public has rightly inquired about the pace of our investigation. That'd be us in particular. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, the further passage of time will raise additional questions about the failure to hold Mr. Trump accountable for his criminal conduct. To the extent you have raised issues as to the legal and factual sufficiency of our case and the likelihood that a prosecution would succeed, I and others have advised you that we have evidence sufficient to establish Mr. Trump's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And we believe that the prosecution will prevail if charges were brought and the matter were tried to an impartial jury. No case is perfect. Whatever the risks of bringing the case may be, I am convinced that a failure to prosecute will pose much greater risks in terms of public confidence in the fair administration of justice. As I have suggested to you, respect for the rule of law and the need to reinforce the bedrock proposition that no man is above the law require that this prosecution be brought even if a conviction is not certain. I also do not believe that suspending the investigation pending future developments will lead to a stronger case or dispel your reluctance to bring charges. No events are likely to occur that will alter the nature of the case or dramatically change the quality or quantity of the evidence available to the prosecution. There are always additional facts to be pursued, but the investigative team that has been working on this matter for many months does not believe that it makes law enforcement sense to postpone a prosecution in the hope that additional evidence will somehow emerge. On the contrary, I and others believe that your decision not to authorize prosecution now will doom any future prospects that Mr. Trump will be prosecuted for criminal conduct we have been investigating. I fear that your decision means that Mr. Trump will not be held fully accountable for his crimes. I have worked too hard as a lawyer and for too long to become a passive participant in what I believe to be, and here are the key words, a grave failure of justice. I therefore resign my position as Special Assistant District Attorney, effective immediately. Sincerely, Mark F. Pomerantz. So there it is. That's the entire letter. And obviously, I don't think this letter meant to be private was intended to be released to the public. Therefore, the allegations made in this letter, I believe, are quite sincere and are borne out by the actual evidence that has been collected by this team. So, with that being said, will someone else step in? Where's the IRS in all of this? If we're talking about financial statements, if we're talking about lies on official documents, Internal Revenue should be on that. I don't know if they are. Are there any other jurisdictions that can pick up this baton and run with it? I don't know.
I think, you know, somebody was
in New York.
Somebody was saying that Hochul could turn the civil case that's going on in the state into a criminal. She could deem it, the AG of the state could then start looking into it criminally. For some reason, she can't. I don't know why. So why Governor Hochul's not doing that, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I do know that the Letitia James investigation, which is New York State, which is
that's what I'm talking about, is she could make it a criminal case. The governors in New York, I don't know why, but I want to say it was a legal person that I was listening to, either talking feds or on hashtag sisters-in-law, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it was a lawyer saying that the governor could turn that into as well. The governor could. I don't know why the AG couldn't, but the governor could. So far, she hasn't. Because if he defrauded in his taxes, he defrauded the state.
Well, the question now is, who got to Alvin Bragg?
No shit.
I mean, he's relatively new, so this may have been a decision that he was going to make anyway. Like, he was going into office thinking, okay, well, as soon as I sit down and take a look at this Trump thing, I'm probably going to pull the plug. Or he was intending to continue on with it and continue to pursue the grand jury and charges through that grand jury, but decided at some point, no. And why did he suddenly decide that? We've seen this time and time again with Donald Trump, where he's paying off people to bury all of his crimes. And this may be another case like that. What were you going to say, David?
I have a couple different things. Just what possible justification did Bragg give internally?
He hasn't dropped the investigation. He says it's still happening. And so the problem is like, well, if you needed more evidence, there were more witnesses that they wanted to talk to you, but you shut it down.
Yeah. And right. And the
resignation letter talks about the risks of bringing a case are greater than the risks of not bringing a case are greater than, but I wonder like if there are specific like threats again. I mean, that's the word that kind of jumped out at me. Mm-hmm. And I've been like picking at this in my brain all morning thinking like, are they concerned for the safety of people who work? And you know, because Trump's like crazy people will come to your job and try to hurt you. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that is an ongoing concern. I know that there are many people in positions like this who are like, yeah, I don't want the red hats coming here and shooting me in the back of the head. And it's a shame that we're
the law itself, like prosecutors can't be afraid of that.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
Everything is fucked.
And certainly Fannie Willis, Letitia James, they're not concerned at all. They're plowing ahead face first. I mean, they're like, hey, look at me. I'm doing this. I'm fucking on this. And Alvin Bragg's like, a little sketchy on this. Please don't kill me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they are being threatened. But if they are, which is, you know, wouldn't be surprising, that's maybe why they back down. But I tend to believe that it has something to do with some palms being greased along the way. And you know what? This is a little discouraging the way I'm seeing this, too, because there's kind of an overlap between what Alvin Bragg is saying and maybe what's happening at DOJ. Like, okay, if we're going to indict a former president here, got to make sure we've got all our evidence. And
he
so
did it all in that fucking open.
I know,
evidence
no
is
shit.
All over the fucking table.
I agree. Yeah.
He stood there and said, we're going to walk down to the Capitol. And
yeah.
You know, I mean, he
I know. It's immensely, immensely frustrating. Okay, so now we're going to segue over to the Shadow Docket show. It was a super long show today, huh? We just couldn't shut the fuck up, huh?
Nope.
Yep. So coming up on the Shadow Docket, we've got maybe a little bit about Mo Brooks here. Mo Brooks is turning against Donald Trump and actually said some pretty revealing information. Talk about evidence. Get Mo Brooks in to testify right now before all the grand juries. Certainly before the 1-6 committee. Get that testimony lined up now. Get whatever he has on Donald Trump. Get your hands on that crap. Because this is kind of startling, the admission he's made in all of this. House Member Mo Brooks. Let's see what else. Oh, my God. You know what? Let's mention this now. Lowest job claims since 1969. For all of you who believe that, Joe Biden's economy sucks, if you're believing that lie. It's the lowest number of job claims since 1969. That was just announced today. That's a big fucking deal. Okay, meantime.
It's a big darn deal.
It is a big darn deal. Another doomed to fail Trump business. We're going to talk about that. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I've got big news for the Shadow Docket. We have voter fraud.
Yeah!
We found. Woo-hoo! We have pinpointed some voter fraud. We're going to talk about that, too. Plus, the oil and gas executives have weighed in about the gas prices in terms of who to blame and who not to blame. We're going to talk about that, too. And just in case you weren't terrified enough, well, I'm just going to say it now. We won't talk about it on the Shadow Docket. But just in case you weren't terrified enough by today's show, it was 70 degrees warmer in Antarctica this week.
I heard that.
Fucking hell, man. Okay, you know, that's all coming up on the Shadow Docket. So sign up now while you still can. Patreon.com/Bob Zuska Show or just bobseskashow.com. Sign up for $5 a month. You get two Shadow Docket shows every week for the price of that subscription. So we thank you so much for joining up and helping to support this show. Okay, that's it. We'll see you over in the Shadow Docket. I don't know if it's going to be more like end of the world talk, but we'll
probably
see.
Bye, folks.
We'll see you over there, folks. Bye-bye.